Jhené and Gola Jr., the podcast.
Boy, do we have a lot of guests today. Jameson Hensley going to keep us up to date on Ravens Steelers. Reese Davis on all the college football playoff rankings and the latest on Nick Saban's positive corona test. Myron Metcalf on college hoops. Brian Windhorst on the NBA. My buddy Christopher Stieg talking Battle of the Blades. And if you don't know what that is, we're about to fill up the rest of your day.
Battle of the Blades. Like, if nothing else comes out of this, Battle of the Blades is a delight.
So we got all that going on. But the big news of the day, Fitz, is, of course, Ravens Steelers postponed from Thursday to Sunday due to COVID-19. We still don't have an official time on that. The silver lining here is that the Bears and Packers were the primetime Sunday night game. And whoever did the scheduling put the Bears in primetime a whole lot would have been better earlier in the season before this, the just incredible slide they've gone on. So I guess we get a good game later in the day Sunday, but Fitz, it takes away the only good game from tomorrow's Thanksgiving slate.
I think that's maybe the most significant part of the postponement is that, frankly, yes, the two early games were trash, but also this is a worst case scenario for the league because they're now stuck in the one spot they don't want to be, a national TV window with no game. And that's why we've seen in other instances that they've moved kickoffs to earlier just to protect to make sure Sunday night has a game or Monday night has a game. It's all been, can we protect the money that comes with broadcasting games in certain windows? Well, when you only have three games on Thanksgiving Day, you can't flex something to that opportunity. So for the league, this is an absolute swing and a miss because they're going to lose out on money and their TV partners are going to be quite angry about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I always kind of forget about. I'm always thinking, oh, just move this to here, move that to there. You would think, you know, working in television, that I would remember that there are television mouths that need to be fed. But I'm thinking to myself, I really hope they move one of those early games between the, as I call them, the WTFs, the Washington football teams, and the Cowboys, or the other trash game between the Lions and Texans. But that's CBS and Fox, right? So you can't just take a game from one network and give it to another in order for it to fit a time slot, especially considering all the other Thanksgiving programming that's scheduled. So we have a lot of questions still left to be answered about this, Fitz. But the thing that we do know is that the seven players already positively tested will not be available Sunday either. So that's already something the Ravens are going to have to deal with, not to mention whatever further spread might happen before then.
Well, and to that end, let's get you the details on everything you need to know. And I think the best way to do that is to have Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL insider, explain it to you. He was on Greeny earlier today with Mike Greenberg, and this is what he said about sort of how we got here and what's coming next.
Ravens have had seven positive player tests in the last 3 days, including two new that came back this morning. They are going to continue. They wanted some more days of the league wanted some more days of testing, right? They wanted to be able to continue testing for the next several days to identify how far this spread is going. They're hoping it's stopping here. They're also identifying the close contacts of those players that have tested positive and evaluating them. None of the seven players who tested positive will be allowed to play in the game Sunday. They won't be cleared by them. So it's running backs Mark Ingram, J.K. Dobbins, the backup quarterback, Trace McSorley, linebacker, Pernell McPhee, center, Matt Skura, defensive lineman, Calais Campbell, and offensive lineman, Patrick McCary. Those guys are all out for the game because they tested positive. So they pushed back the game because they got a couple more positives today, and they want to make sure and take as many days as possible to continue testing to assess where this thing stands and whether it's safe to play it on even on Sunday.
That's an important detail, Sarah, because they're not postponing the game to try and get players back. They're postponing the game to make sure that there aren't more players that could cause the spread to go even wider at this point. Doesn't make it any easier for the Steelers that really wanted to play this game, but frankly, for the Ravens, it's not about getting guys back on the field. It's about making sure they don't put sick people on the field to make other players sick.
And to your point, right, the Steelers have not been happy. We've seen a lot of folks tweeting out about their frustrations. And I don't blame them for that. This is the second time in their season that they have been negatively affected by another team's inability to prevent a spread. The first time it took away their bye week. Now it takes away this primetime Thanksgiving game. In some ways, you'd think, oh, they get Thanksgiving with their families. But I don't know how many people are getting Thanksgiving with their families this year, regardless. And then, you know, I think you have to really think about how you balance the frustration with your scheduling and what you wanted to be able to anticipate with, obviously, Do you want to play against a team that has an uncontrolled spread at that point, where you're going up against players that might be positive? And I think I understand the frustration. I'm going to allow them it, unlike the people in the Menchies of those players who are criticizing their frustration.
Well, and ultimately, I think the biggest concern now has to be, what if it's not just a postponement and it leads to something even bigger? I mean, if this game for some reason doesn't get played, or if they have to move it to this apparent possible week 18, how angry are you if you're the Chiefs looking around saying, wait, you know, we've got one loss. We want the Steelers to have to play every difficult game possible because only the first overall seed gets a bye in the AFC playoffs. So if we know that there's only one seed out there that can get the rest and the Chiefs want that seed, I mean, they got to be looking at it saying, get this game played. That's another part of why I think this is worst case scenario for the league.
It's Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chenang Golic Jr. reminding you, you can be a part of the Chenang Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. The college football season is heating up, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz, filling in for Chenang Golic Jr. today. One way I could see this working out positively for some Fitz is if you cancel that game and things get a little screwy, then you open up the opportunity for that expanded playoff system they talked about. And I happen to know a certain football team in a certain city by the lake in Chicago that might sneak their way in, despite not deserving it at all, if they expanded the playoffs.
Look, I'd love to tell you that I don't want that to happen. Like, I don't want expansion to happen, but let's be real. The Raiders sit at 6-4 also. I mean, you're referencing Chicago trying to get in the NFC, but as good as the AFC looks right now, if it takes adding an eighth seed to get the Raiders in, I'm all for it. Like, whatever it takes to get my beloved Raiders
in. We're rooting for chaos. It's 2020. Can you blame us? Which reminds me, the chaos of tomorrow. We have been counting on this Baltimore-Pittsburgh game to be the part of the NFL Thanksgiving slate that we would really, you know, want to not get too drunk for. Stay up past our tryptophanic slumber in order to be able to watch. And instead, we've got Detroit, Houston, and Washington, Dallas, which had us thinking. And I'm going to put it up at Spain and Fitz, at Jason Fitz, at Sarah Spain. If Baltimore and Pittsburgh was the main event, so the turkey of the NFL's Thanksgiving slate, then what struggle sides are the Detroit, Houston, and Washington, Dallas games? I've seen some of y'all's struggle plates. One of my favorite parts about Thanksgiving is when people post their plate and they think it looks good and everything's beige. And I'm like, what are we doing here? So feel free to, in picture form or just in description, respond to that tweet and let us know what struggle sides. What's the thing that some family member always brings and it sits untouched? For me, I'm not eating Jell-O with marshmallows in it. I'm not a fake food person in general. I like foods made out of real ingredients. No offense to Jell-O or anything else. But that's the one that I always imagine sitting there while all the delicious other food gets scarfed up.
I mean, we all know that I have the palate of a child. I like me some Jell-O, but like,
basically Buddy the Elf.
I know that is. I'm not, does it have sugar in it? Then yes, I love it. I'm like, but is Jell-O with marshmallows like a normal Thanksgiving thing? Like this is
in
this,
the Midwest.
Wow.
And I hope none of my in-laws are listening. There is occasionally a Jell-O marshmallow-based fluff thing happening.
I'm asking for a friend, is there a particular flavor of Jell-O that works in this?
I've never tasted it. So.
Oh, man. This is a delight. And by the way,
we're going to get in trouble. Good thing I'm not seeing any of them this year.
1,000%. Everybody's going to tweet us with cranberry. Like, get creative with this, okay?
Cranberry sauce is trash.
Yeah.
And people who like to eat things shaped like a can, even when they come out of the can, have real issues. And then they need to come to terms with.
The wiggle and jiggle is part of the fun of Thanksgiving, though.
Oh, boy. Moving on. We'll get to that weirdness later in the show. It's Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in.
Chenang Golic Jr., the podcast.
Welcome back to Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in for Chenang Golic Jr. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line, including our next guest, ESPN NFL Ravens reporter Jamison Hensley, with the latest on what's going down with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Jamison, there were a lot of questions around this as some of these positive tests came up, but of all the weeks for it to be the prime game on a Thanksgiving Thursday, it probably took a lot to make this move. I'm assuming they're deeply concerned about even more of a spread than what we see now.
Yeah, because typically when they even have a a high-risk close contact player identified, they need to quarantine for at least 5 days. And it appears from the timetable, they believe what they call the event of transmission occurred on Sunday. So they won't know how many people have been infected, who was their close contacts, until Thursday. So being that so much uncertainty with that, they couldn't play a game on Thursday. They feel like they can get a good handle of who can and who cannot safely play this week as far as from the Ravens by Thursday, but they couldn't make it beforehand. So that's why that's kind of forced the NFL to postpone the game to Sunday. But I mean, with the Ravens are just dealing with one of the biggest outbreaks that we've seen all season. I mean, they have already now, for just this week, so the past 3 days, they have placed 7 players on the reserve COVID list. That doesn't mean all 7 have tested positive. Some have tested positive, some have been close contacts, but you're also dealing with a coaching staff member, a couple other support staff members. This has been widespread throughout the Ravens facility.
Jameson, you just said that they believe that the event of transmission occurred on Sunday. Well, on Sunday, they played the Titans. So how concerned should the Titans be about any possible contact issues?
I believe they feel it was more in the locker room with the Ravens, because I think that's kind of where they have designated. Because if right now, nobody from the Titans have even tested positive. So there's no real concern. And if something would have happened, I think it would have kind of occurred by now. So they have what they call this genome testing. I mean, but believe me, it's way beyond anything that I know of. But they kind of feel like they have a handle of how this was transmitted, who transmitted it, and they feel like by Thursday they will know who should not and who should be playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday.
Jameson Hensley, ESPN NFL Ravens reporter, with us here on Chené and Golic Jr. If I'm being cynical, and I'm looking on Sunday night, when I think there were at least 3 different teams that reported players having tested positive, when did those tests occur? When did the results come back? Should they have been playing in the games they were in? Why is Sunday night or Monday morning a common time for these positive tests? And should we be a little more cynical about whether they're playing knowing that they've already tested positive?
No, I don't think they would know, because they don't. They're trying to limit this as much as possible. They don't want this to be spread more than they can. They have what they call these point of contact testing on the game days. They try to find out as close to game time as possible. I mean, what they have to go with their test, they get tested every single day. And then the day before the game, everybody must be tested. At least I know with the Ravens, they have to be tested by 8:30 in the morning, because before they come back into a hotel and gather into one place, they want to make sure they get those test results and identify if anybody has tested positive. Then on the game, the day of the game, they have what they call the point of contact testing. That tries at least as much as possible to identify if anybody is positive. It can't eliminate everybody, but they try to do their best on that. So, we're just kind of getting to the point now where you look over across the country, it's spiking everywhere.
Absolutely.
The NFL is not in a bubble. I think, honestly, and I don't think it will come to this, and no one is asking me, but if they want to get the season done and have the playoffs, I think each team needs to get into a bubble, put everybody into a team hotel, lock the doors for the next 2 months, and see if they can get the season back on track.
So, Jameson, with that being said, given what you've seen and given your expertise on what the Ravens are dealing with right now, at least, what do you think the chances are that this game actually gets played?
I think it does. I think they really do. They'll have a good handle of who can play by Thursday, and then Friday, the Ravens are hoping they may be able to open up the facility on Friday, have a practice, because right now the facility has been closed except for Monday afternoon, and they had one walkthrough. Everything else has been kind of virtual. And I know the Tennessee Titans have kind of gone through the same thing 1 week where they didn't hardly practice at all for a week, but that's kind of what the Ravens are dealing with right now. They might get one practice in on Friday before traveling to the Steelers on Saturday. So, yeah, the Ravens knew this week was going to be a challenge for any time you play the only undefeated team in the NFL. But right now, it's with the illness. They also have some injuries they're dealing with. For the Ravens, a lot of things I know they feel like. I know the Steelers are upset that the game got moved and they feel like they haven't done anything wrong. But at least for the Ravens, they know they have a big challenge on the field and off the field.
Absolutely. Hey, Jameson, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jameson.
ESPN NFL Ravens reporter Jameson Hensley with us there. Keep following him for the latest. We'll let you guys know what you described the rest of the Thanksgiving slate of games as. And we got some pictures of some struggle sides that frankly, I found offensive. And I know we asked you for them, but you've taken it too far. It's Texans-Lions at 12:30, Washington football team, or as I call them, the WTFs, at the Cowboys at 4:30. More on that coming up. But next, the initial college football rankings came out last night. The committee made it known what they value. We'll talk with the ESPN College Game Day host, Reese Davis.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It's Janae and Golic Jr., although it's really Spain and Fitz right now on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, SiriusXM Channel 80, Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz.
You're on Plus.
Well, yeah, that's
true. I'm having technical difficulties, and I'm wearing a Fire Golden Girls shirt just
for you. I do have to give you credit.
Because I wanted to thank you for being a friend.
I mean, you are wearing a shirt that says Squad and has Golden Girls on it, which is one of the reasons, one of the million reasons that we're friends, right? Like, we have so much common taste. The minute I saw it, I was like, wait, what shirt are you wearing? You said Golden Girls, and I love that. Thank you for being a friend. Absolutely.
Thankful shirt.
We are efforting a little bit of college football playoff talk that we'll get from Reese Davis. In the meantime, we've been asking you on Twitter to compare some of the worst to what we're going to get on Thursday, these two terrible football games in the Washington football team and the Cowboys. And then you've also got the Texans and the Lions.
Yep.
So we have terrible games. So we asked you to compare it to terrible Thanksgiving sides. And Sarah, so far Twitter is winning.
So good. Because, this Pittsburgh and Ravens game was supposed to be the turkey. Now we got all some struggle sides. Wisco Disco 85 hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed to join Chanae and Golic Jr. Nation and wrote, it's like someone brought watery Kraft mac and cheese. And that is true. Like, you got to make your own on Thanksgiving and it can't be watery. J.A. Hikes, Washington Dallas is the dishes you have to do after the meal. Just let them sit for a while. Maybe something more exciting will distract you from it. At Mr. Schuler CMS had a cute little turkey gravy bowl, but when you pour it, it looks like the turkey's puking on your food. So that also checks out.
Just keep them coming to us, obviously, although I immediately regret that we decided to send that out. It looks disgusting. All right.
One
thing that did not look disgusting, it was beautiful, it was glorious, the first college football playoff rankings. We got it last night, and so we'll head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line now where we're joined by ESPN College Game Day host Reese Davis. Reese, thanks so much for the time. Happy Thanksgiving early, my friend. We appreciate you hanging out with us. So the big surprise to many was last night that Clemson was ahead of Ohio State in the initial rankings. What'd you make of their decision to do that?
I understood their reasoning. I don't necessarily agree with it in terms of I don't have it on my AP voter ballot that way. But, you know, more games, better competition. I understand. And a double overtime loss without your starting, not only without your starting quarterback, but without a couple of your primary guys and quarterback and defense and a couple of other important players. So not to take anything away from Notre Dame's win, which was outstanding, and they can beat Clemson at full strength. They're good enough to do so. But just in terms of the committee's rationale, I understood it, but that's not how I have them stacked up.
Reese, BYU on the outside looking in, do you think the committee was fair in assessing them based on their schedule?
I'm not trying to dodge it. I understand it, but I disagree with it. I think with this year, if you're evaluating, you know, what the tape looks like and giving that, I mean, you should always give that a lot of credence, but if you're giving it a little more, I would have them certainly higher than 14th. I'm not going to say it's unfair because I understand it, because it's pretty, I mean, the committee members change, but it's pretty consistent with the way they've approached things in the past, the previous committees, in terms of if your schedule is subpar. And BYU's is, through no fault of its own, they had 6 Power 5 opponents on their pre-pandemic schedule. But, you know, what they've actually played this year is, you know, is not representative of a team that would be, you know, a top 6, 7 team. but I think their performance on the field is that, and I have them ranked around 7. I think 14 is too low, but I understand, I understand the rationale behind it at least.
So with that being said, Reese, as we saw last night, you mentioned BYU's 14, but also Oregon's the highest-ranked Pac-12 team at 15. Now that the College Football Playoff Committee has spoken, does it put extra pressure on BYU and the Pac-12 to find a way to play a game against each other for some credit?
You know what, Fizz, I think the problem here is that we've seen, at least initially, and I do think the committee's in the past, and again pointing out that there are different members which would bring different sensibilities to this, but committees in the past have shown an appetite for reevaluating things, and they may reevaluate BYU and come to a different conclusion. You know, maybe a closer look that changes the results or whatever. But I think the one thing you would look at there is what could they possibly do? It'd be a 14 against 15 or a 14 against a team ranked in the 20s, and I'm not sure that's going to carry the day and make a lot of difference.
Reese Davis with us here on Chanae and Golic Jr., Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Cincy Temple canceled. I don't know how much of an effect that has, but with the rest of the season ahead of them, what's the realistic chance that number 7 Cincy can make their way up? Do they need just actual chaos above them for that to happen?
A small amount. I do think there is a path.
Baby chaos.
They've got 2 games against Tulsa, almost certainly left. And, you know, the Temple game wasn't going to help them. Temple has really struggled this year. But a couple of games against a good Tulsa team could help. I think what they need to root for is for Alabama to get Florida out of the way, for Notre Dame to get Clemson out of the way, or for North Carolina to beat Notre Dame and there only be 1 ACC spot, 1 Big Ten spot. And then I think an undefeated Cincinnati team, if it looks impressive enough, we'll have a winning case over Texas A&M. Now, I could be wrong, and just to be totally transparent, I would probably pick A&M to win the game, but I think in this year, with the extenuating circumstances, that they might have a real shot at getting in under those circumstances.
So, Reese Davis last night was giving us the College Football Playoff ranking show, and afterwards, Mike Olick Jr. and I, like the idiots we are, we did our digital show reacting to it. And what I find interesting, Reese, is in the process of reacting, over the course of 20 minutes, we had 2 different guests, Tom Luganbill and Greg McElroy. And one, Luganbill came in and said, how could Georgia possibly be in the top 10? The next, Greg McElroy said, Georgia, absolutely a top 10 team. I got 2 smart guys looking at the same team trying to figure it out. So, Reese, what should I think of Georgia?
Well, first of all, there you go. I mean, that shows you what happens in the committee. And you know, that's one of the things that bugs me about some of the reactions to it, is it becomes a thing that I think is unfair of, you know, you don't agree with my perspective, therefore you're biased and don't watch games. You know, I hate that. It drives me insane. Different people can look at the same set of data and reach different conclusions. I don't think Georgia's a top 10 team. Maybe with JT Daniels at quarterback in the next few weeks, I will change. I think they're a top 2 or 3 defense, but their offense has been, you know, so bad. They lost decisively their 2 most important games, and while most teams would lose those games to Alabama and Florida, I think that I thought that was a little high. I thought Georgia was high, BYU was low. I know you can quibble over the head-to-head. They gave Texas A&M credit for a head-to-head. They didn't do so with Iowa State, but for the most part, you know, those were the primary issues I had. But I would have Georgia a little bit lower, because I don't think they're a complete team. I think they're really good on defense, and their offense obviously is just now starting to find its stride, perhaps, for JT Daniels.
We got to let you go, but I can't let you go without asking how hyped you are to see where Northwestern was and their real shot at getting in.
The Fighting Reese Davises.
That's right.
My son and I just finished a little Thanksgiving Eve batting practice here. He's wearing his Fighting Reese Davises.
Oh, we lost him.
Oh.
Oh, we lost him.
I wanted to hear about his Fighting Reese Davis' shirt.
We'll see if we can get one for everybody.
But, there we go. All right.
You know, I think they're going to be undefeated going into the Big Ten championship game, but I think Ohio State is truly elite, stronger on offense. I favor Ohio State to win the game. But I think Northwestern will be on championship weekend. Will be playing for a spot in the college football playoff.
I'm just waiting at this point, Reese, to find out how you get your revenge on Joey Galloway for throwing you under the bus that hard. Come on, man.
It's worked out so well. All publicity is good publicity, and so.
Reese, we appreciate you joining us, my friend. Thank you so much. Stay safe. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Great stuff from Reese. And, you know, it was funny as we heard some from Coach last night, the Northwestern coach coming out and saying, problem is Reese is such a nice guy, which is true, but I still wouldn't want to take on the fighting, Reese Davis says. All right, coming up, could we see history made in college sports this season? We'll tell you about something you got to hear about. It's really interesting next. This is Chenea and Golic Jr. Spain and Fitz filling in on ESPN Radio.
Chenea and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenea and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in. Sarah, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, if you've had a good time hanging out with us, you should hang out with us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9
Absolutely.
P.m. Eastern as we're on
and
ESPN.
And probably subscribe to our podcast, too.
Oh, my God, yeah. We give you exclusive stuff on the podcast, too, like as opposed to, I don't know, some shows where they just give you this. No, we give you stuff that you can only get there. Like, we put in the extra work because we love the
Digital
podcast that
only.
Much. I'm just saying, you know, like some of us love our audience more. By the way, Chenea, I'm saying all this because I know Mike won't hear it and can't kick my butt today. Chenea and Golic Jr. reminding you, The Undefeated presents Tiger Woods, America's Son, this Sunday, November 29th, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. The one-hour documentary examines Tiger Woods' complex racial identity and the meaning of the golfer's success in America. Immediately following its debut, the documentary will be available exclusively on ESPN Plus. You can sign up now at ESPNplus.com. So this is where they have a little bit of fun on this show, and they like to you know, do sort of a club energy thing. They tell you to keep that same energy.
We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Chenea and Golic Jr.
All right, so let's get a little keep that same energy going around some quarterback conversation. Mike Glennon got benched in 2017 for Chicago's Mitchell Trubisky, who got benched this year for Nick Foles, who got benched last year for Gardner Minshew, who got replaced by Luton, who's now benched in favor of Glennon. How do you like that whole – that's Charlie Day, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, trying to follow the map that gets you back to Mike Glennon. You in for it?
Well, of course I'm not in for it because the Bears were the team that gave him the money to start at the beginning of that whole mess before he got benched for Mitchell Trubisky, who got benched for Nick Foles, yada, yada, yada. This also reminds me of a couple years ago. Do you remember there was a graphic – that had the NFL, and it made a complete circle, like a wheel of sorts, of this team lost to this team, who lost to this team, who lost to this team, and it went the entire length of the league. And it just reminds you that any given Sunday, right, it's a cliche, but we've already seen it this year where you're like, how the hell did that happen? And Mike Glennon, starting in our year of the Lord, 2020, how the hell did that happen is a question I would like to keep asking. If you ever want to feel sorry for yourself, go ahead and Google the amount of money that Mike Glennon has made as a quarterback in the NFL. And if you really want to feel sorry, go ahead and find out if Colin Kaepernick has played a game in a couple years.
I wonder how puckered up right now Jags fans are knowing that, you know, Mike Glennon's going to come in and start a game, right? And so if you're sitting here in the Jags and you're thinking, man, you know what? We stink, but we've got a shot at Justin Fields. And then you see, I know it's only one game and it's the first time, but Justin Fields did not look good against Indiana. So there's this moment where you're like, he's going to be the great hope and he'll fix our franchise if he can figure out that complicated Indiana defense. I know it's one game, Sarah. I'm just throwing a little shade.
Well, right. And no shade at Mike Glennon, who I'm sure is a very nice guy and is, you know, heads and necks above everybody else. But unfortunately, it's a bad sign for your franchise if you're settling for him getting the starting nod.
Now, one nuance to working with Sarah Spain that I've learned over the years, that your favorite team everybody knows is the Bears. But you also, you have no problem admitting that you also can at the same time root for the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, which is difficult for many fans
to do.
He's
my side piece. Yeah. No, I'll admit it if it comes out, but I don't like to offer up that information.
Well,
I do cheat on my married Bears at times.
It's important because Aaron Rodgers was asked why the long ball's been so good this season, and his response was, and I quote, Bill, thank you for asking that. I've always wanted to say this. Chicks dig the long ball.
Aaron Rodgers is good for quotes like that. That's why I like him so much. He's a tremendous player who I have firsthand, unfortunately, knowledge of over and over again against the Bears, the heroics and Hail Marys and the amazing play. But in addition to that, he's curious, he's educated, he's interesting, he's funny. And that's not a surprising quote from him. One of my favorites was when he was on the Le Batard show, and I think Dan asked him if he ever surprises himself with what he does, or what's the craziest thing that's happened recently. And he just kind of giggled to himself. Did you see the Hail Mary? He just has a great wit about him. And we've seen the long ball a lot. We don't love it when it's against the Bears, Aaron. Keep that in mind. Chicks do not dig that long ball.
As many people have heard before, but I'll never forget, I was playing a show in Tahoe, and it was like the celebrity charity event, right? We were playing in the first song of the set.
Fancy.
We run out to the edge of the stage for the first song of the set. I got to play the toughest fiddle solo of my life while I jump up and down. And that's how we start the show. So I go out to the middle. I'm jumping up and down, playing the fiddle solo. I see Aaron Rodgers three rows back, and I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers, and I'm thinking, that's awesome. That's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers sat there with his arms crossed, and this is years ago. He had many beautiful people around him. We finished our little moment there. I go walking back, and I see him shrug his shoulders. So, you know what? I'm not impressed with you either, Aaron.
Wow, and you haven't forgotten it.
No way.
No matter what was going on in his life, maybe a bad day, maybe he just got broken up with, maybe something terrible happened, but you're going to take it personally that he did not give you a standing O for your jumping fiddle solo.
Why is it when quarterbacks do that, they have a chip on their shoulder, and it makes them good competitors, but when musicians do that,
did you ask him to shake your hand after the concert? Because if he said no, then I'll give it to you. Otherwise, no. I don't know if I'm buying this beef.
I was really drunk after the concert,
we're gonna get him on, and we're gonna ask him if he remembers.
I'm willing to fight
with
him anytime on this.
Bad butt rash or something that was just making him uncomfortable. That's why he's sitting like that.
You know what? I just want, when the world comes back to normal, I want to sit in Lambo, and I want to wait for him to make a great play. And as he comes in running for the Lambo leap, I'm not extending my arms. No, I'm just gonna fold him. And I'm going to go, eh.
Mm-hmm. You think he's going to look in the crowd and be like, hey, it's Jason Fitz. Hey, Jason, why aren't you giving me a standing O?
No, he is not. But you know what? I'll feel better about it, Sarah. And that is all that matters. I'll feel better about it in the moment. I don't forget.
Wow, strong finish, Fitz.
Always is for me. It's weird. Spain and Fitz is up next, which seems strange to say.
It is strange.
But I know it's a great show. Hang out. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, except for Aaron Rodgers.
And who's we?
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.